Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a woman over 40 dealing with hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, or weight gain, you don't have to accept it as just another part of aging. The experts at Midi Health know all these symptoms can be connected to the hormonal changes of menopause. And MIDI can help with safe, effective, FDA-approved solutions covered by insurance. 91% of MIDI patients get relief from symptoms within just 2 months. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. It's true that some things change as we get older. But if you're a woman over 40 and you're dealing with insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, you don't have to accept it as just another part of aging. And with MIDI Health, you can get help and stop pushing through it alone. The experts at MIDI understand that all these symptoms can be connected to the hormonal changes that happen around menopause. And MIDI can help you feel more like yourself again. Many healthcare providers aren't trained to treat or even recognize menopause symptoms. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts. They're dedicated to providing safe, effective, FDA-approved solutions for dozens of hormonal symptoms. Not just hot flashes. Most importantly, they're covered by insurance. 91% of MIDI patients get relief from symptoms within just 2 months. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 193 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, man, I'm good. It feels like not baseball weather again, but hopefully we get back to some warmer weather because it's just not fun. I don't know how you live up north when it's so cold and so snowy. It's been below freezing here, and I don't like that in South Carolina, man, so... Spring training's good. The WBC has been awesome. If anybody says the WBC is boring, then I don't really know what you're watching because it's been intense. Like, it's been really good. So, I mean, Trey Turner said that was like the biggest home run of his career, which is pretty wild. So, college is in full swing. Major and minor league ball's about to start. So, ready or not, here we go. And hopefully everybody's ready. It's been good. But we're going to break down some interesting battles with prospects and even some major league players for Dynasty that could win opportunities this year. So it's shaping up to be interesting spring training for some, and we're going to break it all down.
Yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge episode. A lot of fun players to talk about. Like Chris mentioned some battles, some storylines. And going back to the WBC real quick, though, I've seen a lot of people, especially after, you know, the Daniel Bard fastball that ran in on Altuve breaking his thumb. Like, oh, screw the WBC. Like, okay, that could happen in a spring training game. Like, people, like, yeah, the Edwin Diaz that was super unfortunate. Obviously, that won't be celebrating like that in the spring training game. But people need to see like how important these games are to these players. Like, you've seen people playing for their home country. You're seeing Mike Trout on a big stage finally. Like, for, you know, something we have not seen before. All these players from Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, just like saying how much this means to play for their home country. This means a lot to them. And yeah, it's been fun baseball as well. That Trey Turner Grand Slam the other night was absolutely electric. It was just so much fun. You know, Javier Baez, you know, so many fun players, and it's been really fun to watch and see how it all finishes out here. But yeah, we got a lot of stuff to get to today. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04, and our show's at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And we get into the show. We want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100. And that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, including MLB best balls, individual player pickups across all sports, and so much more. Sign up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. Let's start out in the desert, Chris, here. Recently, Arizona, I mean, it's not overly surprising, though it is kind of disappointing that they optioned Brandon Pfaadt down to AAA, who had outside of that one outing, a pretty good spring. And it looks like it hasn't been set in stone yet, but looks like probably Ryan Nelson gets that last spot. So I guess before we get into Pfaadt, let's start with Ryan Nelson here. What type of league would you be looking to roster a guy like Ryan Nelson in? Obviously, doesn't have the upside of a Brandon Pfaadt, but you know, he's had some solid results of his own. But I don't know. So what are your general thoughts about Nelson this year and long term?
I'm kind of torn on how I feel about him, to be honest. Like, I don't love him, don't hate him. Like, he's not really a target in a 12-team draft, but maybe in the back end of a 15. I'm just not sure. This rotation is just kind of bizarre. He's obviously not going to be the first one out. Like, Bumgarner's just not good anymore. I mean, Zach Davies. Like, this guy's just, I don't know. I'm not surprised that Brandon Pfaadt got sent down, but I don't think it was the right move. Like, this is a move that you make when you say we're not committed to winning early on, which I think is really stupid. Like, if you're going to consider running out Bumgarner and Davies in your rotation, like, they're just not good. So all I have to say, like, I do think that Zach Davies or Ryan Nelson probably gets the nod as the fifth guy. I'd much rather see them take out Bum and Davies and roll with Jameson Pfaadt and Nelson. Why not?
Yeah, I was literally going to say the same thing. Like, I knew it wouldn't happen, but that'd be fun. Throw, you know, Gallen, Merrill Kelly, and then the three young guys. Why not?
Yeah, so Nelson's interesting because, you know, his velo took a major step forward when he moved up to the major leagues. Like, he averaged 93 in the minors last year and was sitting, like, near 95 when he bumped up to the majors. I'm a bit concerned because he is so fastball heavy. Like, he was forcing 70% of the time last year, which is a bit wild to see. But when he is locating it well up in the zone, it's a good pitch. Like, there's no doubt that the pitch definitely plays up, whether the velo is at 93 or 95. You know, he's got a slider, he's got a curve, he's got a change. He doesn't use them enough. He probably should use them a bit more. It was a really small sample in the majors, so it's hard to kind of comment on something. But the curveball just didn't miss bats like it should have. It's got good tendencies, but just didn't miss bats. The slider did miss bats, however. Like, I think it's a pretty solid pitch. And the changeup, you know, it's got to develop a little more, I think. But, you know, right now, I mean, he does have four pitches. He showed four pitches last year. So I don't know what we'll see from him ultimately. It's hard to say. I mean, he's had a pretty bumpy spring training so far. It's gotten a bit better. His last two starts have been much improved. His first two starts were pretty bad. One inning, four earned, then one and two-thirds, three earned. So those were rough, but he settled in. Like his last two starts were 2 2/3, one earned, one walk, two Ks. And then his most recent was 4 1/3 with one earned, one walk, and six Ks. So, you know, that was encouraging to see the strikeouts tick up because he had only struck out four total batters in his first three outings. So to see six in his last start was good. I don't know. I mean, I'm probably not going out of my way to draft Ryan Nelson, but I do think he's going to pitch. Like, and that's like kind of the best characteristic. It's like he's going to be in the rotation. So
he's going to pitch. Yeah, that's half the battle. But yeah, how well does he pitch? I mean, I think Nelson's a back end guy. I like Dre Jameson a little more, but I think he's still, you know, more so a back end guy, number four, number five starter. Fott's the one, obviously, that was really intriguing. And with Fott, like, I don't know what else this dude has to prove in the minor leagues. He had 218 strikeouts last year, 167 innings between AA and AAA. Combined, he has pitched 200 1/3 innings in the upper minors, AA and AAA. He had 138 2/3 in AA and 61 2/3 in AAA this past year, and with great results all the way around. I just don't know. I don't know what else the guy has to prove. He's shown he can miss bats. He's shown he can, you know, limit the walks, and I think he's ready, and he's better than Nelson. He's better than Jameson. I think they're decent, you know, back in arms, like I mentioned, but I was really hoping that Fott was going to get that spot. And I kind of thought it was trending towards, like, that's why I put in my my prospect ETA thread the other day, I put Fott opening that. So I thought, I was like, all right, he's made that rotation, but I, you know, I guess not. I guess that was a couple days too early on that. And if I waited another day or two, he would have been an option down in AAA, but I think he's back soon. Like, I don't think, you know, if Nelson doesn't well, or even like a Zach Davies, or, you know, hit one of those guys, or like a Mad Bum gets hurt, or whoever, I think Fott's probably the next one up. And so I guess in a deeper and shallow leagues, it's hard to stash anybody unless it's like, you know, like Anthony Volpe or, you know, someone of that nature. But, you know, deeper leagues, if you got, you know, some deeper benches, or it's, you know, a deeper league in general, I could see still stashing Fott because he has a chance to make a real impact. And this is a, you know, back end top 10 pitching prospect right now. And Chris has him even a little bit higher than Chris. Do you have him top five yet for pitching prospects or no?
I don't, but he is.
He's inching closer to it, isn't he?
Yeah. Let's see. Let me.
I'm going to guess you have him seventh.
He's pretty close. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that pretty close?
Pretty close. Who is he behind?
He is behind Grayson Rodriguez. He's behind Yuri, Ricky Tiedemann, Kyle Harrison, Gavin Williams. I put Painter behind him because I just think the sad inevitable is going to happen. They're going to string him along. And so I dropped Painter a considerable amount. So he's still in that second tier, but that's a pretty bad news, I think.
Yeah, I'm not... I don't have a good feeling about that either, unfortunately. Let's hope we're both wrong and that he can somehow avoid that. But yeah, we've seen the story play out before. All right, moving over to your Atlanta Braves, Chris. What are they doing at shortstop? Everyone and their mother thought it was going to be Vaughn Grissom, who came up. Yeah, he was a little bit up and down, but overall, pretty solid debut. He was on a near 2020 pace over 41 games, had 5 home runs and 5 steals. Was transitioning over to short this year with Dansby Swanson gone, working with Ron Washington. Now, all of a sudden, Braden Shoemake is the guy. Like, Chris, what is going on with your Braves?
I could probably just rant for a long time about this because I think there's a lot of stupid opinions out there, honestly, of people that haven't watched Vaughn Grissom play in the field, and they just look at the baseball savant numbers of a small sample of a 21-year-old rookie that was playing out of position. I think it's really stupid to just sit here and try to say that he's not capable of playing in the field. Do I think that Vaughn Grissom's a world-renowned shortstop? No, I've never made that claim, but do I think he's serviceable? Yeah, absolutely. So on the topic of what's going on, there's a lot of speculation. He hasn't started at shortstop for 5 straight games. At this point, if you're listening to this on Monday, he's supposedly going to be starting at shortstop again. So here's what I've heard. One, that he tweaked something And that's why he wasn't in the field. He didn't play for a couple days. And then he came back as a DH. Could have been a minor injury. They haven't said. I also heard that they were shopping Shoemake in a trade, and they wanted to just kind of put him out there. He was playing good this spring. I mean, he was performing well.
Who wants Shoemake, though?
I don't know. Here's my issue with it. If Shoemake was a plus defender with a plus arm, then I'm okay. Maybe it makes a little more sense. But Shoemake isn't even – he's fine, but he's not like an elite shortstop. Like, we're not talking about a gold glove shortstop with a high-end arm here. His bat is horrific. And people try to call me out on it. Like, I don't really care. Like, he is what he is. Like, he's well below average at the plate. We're talking about a 25-year-old who, over the last 2 years at double and triple A, was well below average. We're talking about an 84 and an 89 WRC plus at both levels. We're talking about OBP between both 2021 and 2022 of 292, as a guy's pretty old for the levels. That's just, there's nothing good about that. And yeah, people try to say, well, he made improvements. Like, he made improvements this offseason. He's got to make some significant improvements for him to really make an impact on this lineup. Like, if they're running Braden Shoemake out here every day as a shortstop, they're saying, hey, we want an automatic out in the ninth spot every time. Like, that's all they're saying. Grissom is at least really good. I don't care about his glove that much. I understand the need for a good shortstop, but I wouldn't say that Dansby Swanson was like a world beater at shortstop either. And the odd thing is that they've done nothing but hype Vaughn Grissom all offseason. I'm not sure if that was a tactic just to try to trade him. I don't know what exactly it was. And I don't know. I mean, and you can look at the Savant thing in Dansby Swanson's 100th percentile outs above average. So I'm sure people will get all bent out of shape that I said that. So whatever. I don't really care, but I just think the whole situation's weird. And I think there's something going on behind the scenes that they're not saying, and that no one will even tell me behind the scenes. So I've tried to like dig and talk to some people and figure out, and I don't have a clue, to be honest. But if the Braves are starting Braden Shoemake at shortstop, then it shows that they completely fumbled the offseason, is what they did. If you truly didn't believe in Vaughn Grissom all offseason, you would have re-signed Dansby or got another shortstop. That's just my opinion. I still think it's Vaughn Grissom's job to lose. I'd be really shocked. And the bats with Vaughn Grissom, we know, is really good. Talking about the difference here, Vaughn Grissom has been like 40 to 50% better than league average at every stop. And Braden Shoemake's been well below average, like based on WRC plus. Like, people say, well, Grissom's quality of contact's not good. All right, he was, for his age, he's actually above average when we're looking at like exit velocities. His zone contact last year was 90% between the minors and the majors. Like, I don't really know. Like, it's just like people are throwing out these stupid arguments and they don't take anything into account. And I'm ranting enough about it. I think the whole thing's really bizarre and weird at the end of the day. Who knows? Orlando Arcia may start, which I think would be terrible too. I have no clue what happens at this point. I'm at a complete loss. But to sit here and just bash Vaughn Grissom like I've seen and say that he's not a MLB caliber player is just asinine at this point.
I mean, how dare he not be a gold glove caliber second baseman right off the bat in this rookie season down the stretch for a championship caliber team? How dare he?
He never even played second base before. Like,
how dare he? It's like, this reminds me a little bit different, but when, you know, Xander Bogaerts got brought up by Boston way back when, and then they just moved him over to third and put Stephen Drew at shortstop. I'm like, It's infuriating. And so I was just actually reading a comment on when I quote tweeted about about Grissom earlier, about how someone, I can't find it now, but someone said something along the lines of, you know, first they were threatening Orlando Arcia, and now Shoemake, it must be messing with Grissom's head. Yeah, it absolutely could. Like, this is that mental side of it. Like with Bogaerts, he had to move over to third base after coming up as a shortstop. And, you know, who knows? That confidence is huge in a young player. And, you know, Chris is upset because he's a Braves fan. I'm upset because my most rostered player on NFBC formats is Vaughn Grissom, because I was getting him everywhere because you had a potential to go, you know, could go flirt with 2020, solid average, solid OBP, even hitting in the bottom third of the Braves order. he was still on pace for, you know, I think it was a combined like 160-ish running RBI pace like last year, which is obviously Atlanta's lineup is, you know, bottom thirds to be better than a lot of bottom thirds across baseball. So I wasn't even worried about the roster spot. He's going to have dual eligibility, you know, by the end of April. There's so many positives. And the ADP was chilling at like, what, 175, give or take. Was loving it. You know, great dynasty target, great redraft target. I had him in like over half of leagues. You know, if I was preaching, if you miss out on shortstop, if you somehow, you know, if you decide to wait on shortstop, but then you end up waiting too long. You know, I was passing up guys. You know, the guys in between the top 13, you know, like the where it drops after Pena and Correa. Then it's like, you know, Ahmed Rosario, Javi Baez. I was just passing on them. Like, I can get Vaughn Grissom, who I think is probably going to have a better year than those guys later on. And now this, I agree. I think it's still Grissom, but at this point, I don't know what Atlanta's doing. Let's hope it's Grissom, because Shoemaker has no value. He's not good. He's never really been that good in the minor leagues, so I have no reason to think he's going to be good in the major leagues, more than like a backup infielder or something like that. And we've seen time and time again where Orlando Arcia is sort of that one hot week he had when he kind of stepped in for Albies at one point in time. He's been a backup in, you know, infielder utility guy. So, yeah, it's just something to kind of monitor for the next week and a half leading up to the regular season. And also, real quick, number five spot here in Atlanta. Chris, what are your thoughts there? Do you think it's going to go to Jared Schuster? That's kind of the way it's trending now. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's the way they go?
Well, both Jared Schuster and Dylan Dodd have been extremely good. I think they just go with Schuster out of the fact that he just has a much longer track record. And for that reason, like, I kind of lean that way. And that's not to bash like Dylan Dodd at all. I think Dylan Dodd's been highly impressive this spring with what he's done. And he's matched Schuster like at every step where, you know, it's like, all right, Schuster just had a great start. Like, he's got the advantage, and then Dylan Dodd makes the case for it. I mean, we're looking at 13 innings at 0.069 ERA or 0.69 ERA, 15 Ks in 13 innings. Like, those are really good numbers from Dylan Dodd. And I think that we probably failed to realize how good he was last year over 142 innings. He posted 153 strikeouts and a 3.36 ERA. And that was between three levels, going from high A to triple A. So very encouraging to see there. But I just feel like Schuster just has the edge from his experience a bit, where we've seen him, you know, have a little bit longer track record. And he stepped up to the plate. I mean, like, the Braves have just developed pitchers really well. And who knows, if Kyle Wright isn't ready, then both these guys could get a chance. But I'm actually in on Schuster. I'm taking a chance on him pretty much anywhere I can, because this could be like, when I wrote him up, like, I really felt like this could be close to like what Kyle Wright was last year. I know the Kyle Wright's ERA was like exceptionally low, but I think Schuster could be like a mid threes ERA. He's going to get a lot of wins on this team, and the strikeouts have really ticked up a bit this spring. So if what we've seen this spring is legit, then I'm pretty in on Jared Schuster. I think I'd draft him in pretty much any format, like 12 team and above.
Yeah, he's definitely intriguing for sure. I've just been wondering how this is going to play out. Like, they have Schuster, you know, they have Dodd, obviously. You know, at some point, you're going to have, you know, Ian Anderson trying to get back into the mix. You'll have Mike Soroka, you know, back at some point, fully healthy as well. I mean, I would probably take Atlanta 6-10 over Oakland's 1-5 in the rotation. That's how much depth you guys have and how little firepower
Oakland has. Like, five arms from Atlanta.
I know. And it's like, you didn't even give up like your really good ones. It was like, you give up the guys. Who was the one you gave up in that Matt Olson deal? Oh, the younger. He had that really kind of breakout year, then he kind of fizzled a little bit.
Can't even remember who else. They've made so many trades with Oakland, I can't keep up. Let's see.
Oh, I'm completely drawing a blank on it. I'm like looking at his face too. He was broke out. He was like in low A, broke out a bit. He was a righty.
I feel really, really dumb.
I gotta look it up. Hold on a second.
Ryan Cusick or Joey Estes?
Estes. That's all. There you go. Estes was who I was trying to think of there. Yeah, and he kind of, I mean, he actually wasn't terrible, but yeah, it's just Atlanta has this endless pitching, you know, factory here. And obviously, the top, assuming Wright's healthy, the top four are locked in. At the same time, can you count on a 39-and-a-half-year-old Morton for a full, you know, 30-plus starts? I mean, maybe, but Schuster is definitely very interesting. He's definitely, out of all the rest of these guys, I mean, I kind of wanted to see what if Ian Anderson could bounce back, and there's still at least a little something there. Obviously, Soroka probably is the safest out of all them. Well, coming back from major surgeries, maybe not, but, you know, at one point in time, he was considered a very safe arm. I'm just wondering when we see them. Do you think there's any value in those guys this year? Like, how do you see that playing out behind Schuster? I mean, if he pitches well, keeps the spot, like, what do they do with, especially with Soroka and Ian Anderson?
I think it's kind of like a perfect storm for Soroka. He's a bit behind, like, and that's okay because Soroka was never going to throw 150 innings this year, considering right. He hasn't pitched since 2020. So I do think that this, weirdly enough, I think it's a case where it probably like helps somebody like Charlie Morton. It helps somebody like a Spencer Strider. Like, I don't think either of those guys are, I know Morton threw a significant amount of innings last year, but like, I honestly think that both Morton and Strider are probably guys that throw 150 to 160 innings. Morton could be terrible. I mean, Morton's 39. Wasn't great last year. I know he got 200 Ks, but he wasn't great last year. And then he's been up and down the spring. So I have a hard time imagining they're not going to just going to pull their $20 million arm and Charlie Morton out of the rotation. We know Fried, Strider, and Wright are in there. So it may be a case where a couple guys get more rest. That may benefit a Strider and Morton a little bit. So I still think Soroka's going to get his time when he comes back. Ian Anderson, I have no idea, like, at this point. Like, is he just a lost cause? It's highly possible. So I'm not really sure, but it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. Probably some more trades in the works. And who knows? Maybe this is the case where the Braves go trade for a shortstop. This may be. I don't know what they're doing at this point with the shortstop position. So if they're not content on Grissom, they're not content on Shoemake, maybe they use some of these arms to get a better shortstop. We will see.
Yep, that definitely could be the case. All right, let's move over to Tampa Bay here. Recently, they optioned Curtis Meade and Taj Bradley to AAA. But Kyle Manzardo, as of Sunday night, 9:15 p.m., Manzardo's still up. I don't know. I still don't think Manzardo makes the team on opening day. But at the same time, all three of these guys are very, very close. And that's just like Tampa Bay even more dangerous. Like, obviously, they're already a very good team. You know, Manzardo and Meade are both top 20 prospects for me, both in average and OBP. Obviously, Manzardo gets a nice little OBP bump as well. Taj Bradley's a top 10 pitching prospect. I think all three of these guys make a pretty solid impact this season. And I think they're probably all up by the end of May. I mean, I know that's kind of un-Rays-like to do something like that, but kind of look at what the Rays are rolling out there right now. I mean, at first base, yeah, Yandy Diaz is there, but he's already been dealing with an injury. Meade can play he could probably play any infield position besides shortstop. He could DH as well. And then Taj Bradley could, you know, back into that rotation right now is, you know, maybe Yonny Chirinos in the five spot with Glasnow, surprise, surprise, already hurt again. So I think you can see Taj Bradley very early too. So I'm thinking they're all up by like the end of May or so. Do you think Manzardo makes the team though? I mean, he's still up. I mean, at this point, if players aren't, you know, obviously he probably will get sent down, but it's pretty telling that he's still up. So either he's going to make this team or he's going to be up very early in the season.
And I wish I had a better gauge on this. I really thought that Curtis Meade would be the one that was still up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I thought it'd be flip-flop.
That seemed to be the case. Like, they're talking about, like, an extension with Curtis Meade, and it's like, okay, like, if they're looking to actually do a long-term extension, then it's highly possible that he is up on opening day. And he obviously got sent down. So I don't think that Manzardo makes a team. You don't bring up a top prospect like this unless you're committing to him every day. And as you kind of look at the depth chart, it's like, I don't know. Like, who would they out to play Manzardo every day? Maybe it's not that big of a deal. I mean, they, like you said, Yandy Diaz is going to be at first. Isak Paredes at third, but both guys are kind of interchangeable in the corners. Could Manzardo dispel Harold Ramirez at DH? Yeah, but do you bring up your top prospect and just put him at DH? Doesn't seem like a great idea. They also have Jonathan Aranda on the bench, who's pretty much a first baseman at this point. Like, I don't really see Aranda fitting elsewhere. So it's kind of just a big mess here, honestly. I don't know how it shakes out. My expectation before spring training was that Manzardo was likely going to be down until like late season. I mean, he got a later call to Double A. He spent most of the year in High A, went to Double A. So I just assumed that he could start in Double A and then get to Triple A by the end of the year. He's advanced his bat's advanced enough where he could go with the team right with the Rays right now and be good, but. Just being honest, like, I don't have a good read on this situation, and I don't know when he will be up.
Yeah, it's always hard with the Rays, and Yandy's been, you know, pretty solid. Like, the metrics are still there with Yandy, so waiting for him to start lifting the ball more. Maybe he could have a nice little breakout year in his early 30s, but yeah, what is their long-term plan here? Aranda, I feel like he's starting to fall out of favor a little bit. You know, fair or unfair, this is kind of how it feels to me. And they haven't given him a shot yet. He's kind of like in limbo right now in terms of kind of where he looks like he's going to be long term. Is he a starter? Is he kind of a utility bench guy? He's not a great defender, so that's kind of a weird fit for him. But do they see him as a full-time starter? I don't know. Is he going to upseat? He's not upseating Brendan Lowe at second base. That's not going to happen. I don't know. It's weird with Aranda, but I do think we see Manzardo pretty early. I think we see Mead pretty early too, but where, you know, probably I'm still not fully. I mean, some of the metrics are pretty solid with Isak Paredes, but is he the long term answer at third? I don't know. Mead's not a great defender either. He's more bat first as well, but I don't know. Maybe it's gonna take an injury or something, or maybe it's DH with Harold Ramirez, who I do like a little bit as like a late round dart throw. But yeah, I do think we see Manzardo especially. I mean, Mead was doing all right this spring. Manzardo especially was looking really good this spring here. Let's see, so far 333, 400, 630 slash line, two doubles and two home runs over 13 games. Let's see, where was Mead at here? Mead 227, but same time, two home runs and a double in just nine games. So a 545 slug and a 328 ISO. So both overall doing pretty well. But hey, so was Yandy Diaz, was hitting well this spring, albeit in pretty limited time because he was dealing with a little bit of an injury there. Aranda, for what it's worth, 3-for-14, two doubles and a home run. So I think he ends up falling out of favor just because I think Mead's better, Manzardo's better. Aranda's a solid bat. Like, I don't think there's anybody saying he's not, but I just wonder if he falls out of favor. Maybe he gets traded away for, you know, I don't know, a pitcher or a bullpen arm, who knows. But I do think we see Mead and Manzardo and Bradley all early this year. So they're all three pretty good stashes in redraft leagues and obviously great dynasty targets as they all have pretty high upside long term. All right, speaking of the team or not making the team, we got five names here that look like they have a pretty good chance of making the team here. Bryce Miller in Seattle, Casey Schmidt, San Francisco, Will Benson in Colorado, Blake Sable with the Giants, and Oscar Colas with the Chicago White Sox, all performing pretty damn well this spring as well, which obviously plays into it. Out of these five, Chris, is there anybody that stands out that, you know, up head and shoulders above the rest? They're like, all right, this guy is making the team or he's not making the team, or is anybody you have your general thoughts on?
Well, I mean, as much as I'd love Bryce Miller to make it, I'd say he's still a long shot, but he's definitely given the team something to think about. The Giants duo is pretty interesting in Blake Sable and Casey Schmidt. I mean, the Giants seem pretty committed to Blake Sable, and rightfully so. I mean, what Sable's done has been highly impressive so far this spring. And honestly, at the Arizona Fall League, I had no clue who he was. I saw him, and I was like, this guy's physical presence, man. And he was really good. Like, he stood out more to me than Henry Davis did, which is kind of wild. Yeah. And then they don't even protect him on the 40 man. He goes to the Rule 5. Cincinnati drafts him, I think, fourth overall, and then trade him to San Francisco. Pretty crazy. Anyway, a 1207 OPS so far this spring, 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, and 32 at bats for Sable. The nice thing is that Sable's pretty versatile. He can play first base, he can play a corner outfield spot, he can catch. So those things he has going for him, which are huge perks. And obviously roster resources buy it in. They've got him in the lineup as the everyday DH. That's value too. He's going to be in the lineup. So I think that Casey Schmidt can make this team as well. I mean, we're talking about David Villar starting at third base for them. Casey Schmidt's a gold glove caliber third baseman, and his bat's really come along too. I mean, he's been smoking it all spring. He took a step forward last year, and a lot of people just didn't really seem to notice that he took that step forward. And obviously the glove's always been really good. So I think Schmidt's still being a bit underrated. He's playing third and some short. Like he's versatile on both. So that's really nice to see. He had another really good game today as we're talking about this. So it's been encouraging to really see what Casey Schmidt's done. And man, it just makes me encouraged. I think that both guys could make this roster for sure. They're advanced and they're ready. Will Benson and Oscar Colas, both these outfielders should make it. I mean, is Nick Senzel ever going to be healthy again?
No.
Probably not.
No.
So there's that open spot in the outfield for Benson. I think Benson can make this team. He's pretty intriguing from power speed standpoint. He's overall an interesting late round dart that I take. And Colas, I've talked a lot about. I just love what Oscar Colas did last year, especially considering he was out of professional baseball for 2 years prior to last season. He still tore it up and had an awesome year, making all the way to AAA. They've been giving him an everyday run, and I think that's going to continue into opening day. So I would say that Bryce Miller is probably the biggest long shot here, sadly, even though I think he deserves it. And I would say that Oscar Colas is probably the biggest lock of these five.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. Colas, he's been hitting for average, keeping the K rate down. The other day, he had like one walk and one strikeout all of spring. I haven't looked at his overall stats since then, but yeah, he's just putting them on play, keeping the K rate down. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be a huge, you know, walk rate guy, huge OBP guy, but he should hit for a solid average, you know, 25 or so home run bat, maybe even a little bit more than that. Get the wind blown up there in Chicago in the summertime. So, yeah, definitely Colas. Very, very intriguing this year. I mean, I wonder if they, I mean, he doesn't deserve to be platoon. I'm not saying that, but, you know, Gavin Sheets is a lefty, Colas is a righty. I could see them kind of doing a little bit of a platoon, not enough to like really steal a ton of at bats away from Colas, but I do think he's going to be primarily the starter there and definitely intriguing for where he's going in drafts. And yeah, Will Benson, we've seen, you know, Benson always had the size, the strength, the speed, the athleticism, but he just could never hit for average, was always striking out too much. But then he made some tangible changes last year, dropped the K rate down a ton while still having that nice power speed blend and keeping the high walk rate. Although it's kind of odd, he's 0 walks this spring to 9 strikeouts, but he's had 5 steals, got a home run so far. hitting well over 300 as well. Great ballpark. And yeah, I don't, Nick Senzel is like a worse version of Byron Buxton, you know, even more durability issues and even less talent. So it looks like with Senzel missing time, you know, Benson's probably, I mean, who else would they start? Like, you know, they probably got, you know, Fraley and Friedel in that outfield, and then probably Benson. I don't think they're going to start. I mean, what if the outfielders even have, like, Chad Pinder can play some outfield, I guess, but I don't see why they wouldn't go with a guy like Will Benson to see, hey, what's there? I mean, maybe Steer goes out there a little bit as well. I don't know. It's kind of going to be probably a fudge in that outfield, but Benson definitely deserves a shot with how he, I mean, they got him for a reason, and then they acquired him this past offseason, and he's shown the upside before. He's got all the, you know, I said the really high potential for fantasy purposes. If that, what we saw last year with him dropping the K rate, making more contact, if that can stick even to some degree, this is a very exciting player in a very exciting home ballpark. So really intrigued to see what Will Benson can do here. Obviously, Colas, very nice bats, as we were just talking about. Yeah, and Blake Sable, like I heard some people within Pittsburgh liked him more than Henry Davis, and or at least the bat, I should say. And like you mentioned, Chris, he could play a little bit all over the field. I mean, he's played some out, even last year, he played, let's see how many games in the outfield, 21 starts in the outfields, as in addition to all his games at catcher. He's played both corners back in the day, college, and on the Cape as well. He's a good athlete. You know, performance was absolutely there this past year in the minor leagues as well. He hit 284, 363, 497, 26 doubles, 19 home runs, and 10 steals as well in 123 games. Hit 310 year before that. The dude just hit everywhere he's gone in the minor leagues. You know, even out in the fall league, he only hit 234, but had two doubles, a home run, and a 346 OBP. So very, I've got him in a few of my, you know, DCs and best balls, because super late. Just have another catcher, obviously. His catchers always go down, and I think he's going to get some run there. And Schmidt as well. Like David Villar, he's had some his moments in the minor leagues, but I think Schmidt obviously is a better long-term player. He's starting to really kind of move his way up prospect rankings, both for real life and fantasy. He's a good all-around player, probably never turns into a fantasy star, but a guy that can hit for, you know, 260, 20 home runs, something like that. Maybe he's like a, I don't know, make a Ryan McMahon type offensively, something like that. It's a pretty solid, but not a standout. And I think he's definitely going to get a chance here, whether it's an opening day or not. I don't know. But if not, he's going to be up pretty soon afterwards. Talking about a guy that got up to AAA last year, but though it was running for four games in the end of the year. So he is a little bit more, you know, has less experience in the upper minors than a guy like Blake Sable does, or most of these other guys that we're talking about here. Only has 33 games above high A, but he's performed everywhere. He's performing well this spring, obviously. So I think he's up early, but I don't think opening day for him. But I do see Blake Sable getting up there on opening day. All right. Recent signing, which is the most Rocky signing ever. Jurickson Profar goes to the Rockies. I don't know who they're bidding against, and I don't know why. I know why, because of the Rockies. This is what they do. But a little bit intriguing here. I mean, Profar in general is not intriguing, but he's now in Colorado. It sounds like they might hit him lead off in front of, you know, like Bryant and Crone and McMahon and Blackman if his back ever feels better. So maybe he's got a little bit of intrigue here, Chris, or I don't know, maybe not. Are you intrigued by Profar maybe leading off in Colorado?
No. Yeah, I didn't need to give a detailed answer. I think that the Coors effect's a bit overblown in some cases. Like, it doesn't make a bad hitter like elite or anything. I don't really think there's much to love about Profar's profile. He hit 15 home runs last year, over 658 plate appearances. Coors isn't a magical home run boost park. Like, that's not going to happen. It does boost his BABIP a bit, so, you know, maybe his batting average ticks up to like 250. He's a career 238 hitter, you know, so that'll be interesting to see, like, kind of what happens there. I'm just not into him. His ADP is going to go up 100 spots, if not more. depending on how, you know, I don't know. I'm just not in on him at all. And the signing really does nothing for me. What it does do, unfortunately, is I think block Elarius Montero, who's been doing nothing but earning a spot this spring. Here they go blocking another young player because Profar is going to play in left most likely or first base. He's not really serviceable anywhere else. So either way, what that does, so if he's in left field, it bumps Chris Bryant to right. That bumps Charlie Blackman to DH. If he's at first, bumps CJ Cron to DH. Either way, that bumps Montero out of the lineup because, sadly, they did another signing like this. They're going to roll with Mike Moustakas, most likely at third base. So I don't know. I mean, this team is just I can't imagine, you know, being a fan of this team. Like, they're – I don't know. We go on a long rant about the Rockies, but they're just the Rockies at the end of the day, and they're going to do stupid stuff. I really don't have – I don't know. I could keep going on and on, but I'm going to stop. I don't have any interest in Jurickson Profar.
Yeah, just when you think that maybe some young guys get a chance here in a two-week span, they signed Moustakas officially on the 5th of March and then Profar today on Sunday on the 19th. So, yeah, it's very Rockies-like. I would love this to be a fly on the wall in that front office just to, like, hear the thought process behind all of these head-scratching moves they made over the last decade or more. Hey, at least I wanted to see Montero have some run. I think he was a decent late round kind of target in deeper leagues. This kind of pushes Tolia to the minor leagues, probably, though he was striking out a ton. And I still don't have too high of hopes for a guy like Michael Tolia. But yeah, Montero, I was kind of hoping to see. But as long as it doesn't do anything to Profar, but as long as they don't bring in somebody to mess with Profar, I mean, Profar, Tovar, too many guys ending with AR on their name right now. Just don't mess with Tovar. That's all I ask. Do not mess with Ezekiel Tovar because I love Tovar. I think he's had a really good year. But yeah, this is a really weird lineup. Like, are they trying to pretend like they can contend? I just don't get some of these moves. And I don't know why. And I know money obviously played into it, but why did Chris Bryant sign there? I just don't. I mean, do you just not care about winning at that point in time? As you know, the Rockies are not going to win. That's really weird. I mean, Chris Bryant, people are buying back into Chris Bryant. Just don't. I know we didn't have Chris Bryant on the docket here for this episode, but just don't buy back into Chris Bryant. The dude's never healthy. I don't trust him to ever stay healthy, at least be 100% healthy. And the metrics have fallen off. Many rant there, but don't buy back into Chris Bryant. Do yourself a favor and let somebody else deal with that headache here. All right, moving on from all of that, a couple of number five rotation battles in New York. The Yankees, Clark Schmidt versus Domingo Herman. With the Mets, we got David Peterson versus Tylor McGill. We'll start with the Mets here. I like both McGill and Peterson. I've still been drafting them, you know, in my DCs and my best balls here. The reason why I think it goes to Peterson, he's the one I've been drafting a bit more, is that outside of the first four, Verlander, Scherzer, Senga, Carlos Carrasco, they're all righties. Peterson's a lefty. I feel like that gives a slight advantage there. And he's been looking – both of you guys have been looking pretty good this spring. Peterson especially, that slider, is so damn good. I think he's, you know, probably – if he's going to start – if you gave him as many innings as Kodai Senga this year, I might lean towards Peterson. Obviously, you can't guarantee that. That's why he's going 150, 200 picks later in drafts, but I think Senga is, I mean, Peterson is just as good, you know, potentially with value wise as Kodai Senga this year. I think Peterson, if you can get him still past pick 300, even with him probably being in the rotation to start the year, who knows how long Jose Quintana is out. We've heard anywhere it's a rib. So it's kind of, those ribs are tricky, you know, and they can be kind of tweaked very easily with just all the, you know, torso and moving with the body there of the core near the rib area. Always can re-injure that. So, you know, I'm wondering how many innings Quintana pitches at all this year. Probably won't be a ton. Could re-injure it. But I love Peterson. I think he's a great dynasty buy, a great redraft target this year. McGill, too. But go out and get David Peterson because he is going to be an absolute steal. If you can just get, like, even if, you know, Quintana comes back and Peterson moves back into a, I don't know, maybe like a multi-inning role or something like that, I think he's still going to get probably 150-ish innings this year, and you know, good amount of strikeouts, maybe a little bit of a higher whip, a little bit higher walk rate factors into that, but gets you the K's. I think the ERA would probably be like mid threes, something like that. So yeah, I think great value in all formats right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, as you mentioned, is the fact that Peterson's a lefty, and
yeah,
that probably significantly aids his chances right now. But I will say, I think that Tyler McGill probably gets a significant amount of innings this year just because
I don't
trust the health of this rotation. I trust, crazy enough, I trust a 40-year-old Justin Verlander the most. But you know, I don't think Kodai Senga's throwing more than 140, 150 innings this year. He's already shown that he had a finger injury earlier in the spring. I know he's fine. I mean, Scherzer can't stay healthy either, so I'm not counting on him. Carrasco, like, there's a lot of risk here. So, well, I think Peterson probably gets the, you know, the first crack at the rotation. I still see McGill probably making 15 plus starts on this team, this rotation. Yeah. And, you know, I think both are going to be good, but ultimately I'm just a little more confident in Peterson right now. I do, like I said, I like both. McGill does grade out better on Eno's stuff plus pitching plus model, but overall, like, you know, there's definitely be some things that change with that too. So like, you know, Peterson could have made a couple changes this offseason. We could see that tick up a bit. So those will be fun to follow. Those were also a bit of smaller samples. So we'll see. I just am a bit more in on David Peterson right now.
Yeah, and he's a lefty, probably replacing a lefty. So, yeah, that's why I was kind of, when I started that rant, was I was in on both these guys, because I think, I don't know how many starts they make. Even if it's just 15 to 20, though, each, like, with all they'll get out of the bullpen, multi-inning stints here and there, spot starts, like, I think they both get 130 plus, maybe, I guess, 150 or something like that. With all, this is a very old, very talented rotation, but a very old rotation. Wasn't Quintana like the youngest one? No, Senga
is the youngest. He's 30,
Quintana's 34 now. Wow. But yeah, the youngest one was Senga, and then Quintana was the second youngest at 34. Carrasco's 36. Scherzer will be 39 later in the year. And Verlander just turned 40. So yeah, it's a very old rotation. Like you mentioned, a lot of, you know, potential to miss time. So both these guys are still great targets, no matter who gets that last spot. I think we're both in agreement that's David Peterson, but I think both are good targets in general. Moving over to the Yankees here, who do you think gets that fifth spot between Herman and Clark Schmidt? I'm leaning Schmidt. I've always liked Schmidt a little bit more. He's out of the cutter this spring, which is pretty intriguing, but what are your thoughts there?
And Schmidt also is throwing the sweeper the most of any pitches, which is very encouraging. It's like, lean on your best pitch most often. Yep. And that's been really huge for him. He's been, I mean, his last start was 5 perfect innings with 7 Ks. So that's obviously really encouraging. He leaned on the sweeper. Yeah, that cutter is really good. So actually, I think that both probably are in the rotation, just the way that they're pretty beat up. I don't think Rodon starts the year in the rotation. We know Montas may not even pitch this year. So they both could be in the rotation, but ultimately I'd much rather have Clark Schmidt. Like, I've always liked Clark Schmidt a lot. There's obviously some bias because he's a South Carolina boy, so there's a little bias there on my part, but he's just been pretty good, like, consistently. And now he's like doing things to make changes. I just think he's going to be in for a big year. Like, I don't think we're talking about ace level stuff, but I still think we're talking about a really solid arm, mid rotation guy. If the K's tick up, which I think they're capable of, considering the leaning on the sweeper plus the cutter, then I don't know. I mean, if he's striking out 25 to 28% of batters, then things get really interesting here with Clark Schmidt. So the Yankees just typically do a good job with development, and they've done a good job here. So while I think Herman probably gets starts early in the year, like, I'd still rather have Clark Schmidt.
Yeah, I totally forgot to factor in Rodon too. So yeah, they probably do both are in that rotation to start the year. But I do like Schmidt more. I've always been a Schmidt guy. Like, you know, until the last, he's had a bit of a bumpy ride the last couple of years. Obviously had some injuries that played a big factor in that, but before that, like, this dude was just nails everywhere he went. College, minor leagues. The dude just performed at a pretty high level. And yeah, I don't think the upside is huge, but I've long thought that he's a very good mid-rotation guy that gets you like a, you know, mid-3 ERA, 25-26% K rate, you know, keep the whip in check as well. And you got to get you 160-170 innings a year. Just guy that will probably always fly under the radar a bit. He kind of did as a prospect as well, despite all the success that he had and being a high drafty several. What year was Clark Schmidt drafted? It's been a while now. Was it 20? I'm going to guess 2017. No, 2018. He was 2017. I was teetering between those 2 years. But yeah, number 16 overall pick by the Yankees out of obviously out of South Carolina, like Chris mentioned. And look at the minor league numbers here. Just kind of show what I was talking about here. And career in the minor leagues, 3.16 ERA. In college, 3.21. He's just always right there. He's as steady as they came. You know, pretty solid walk rate. Can miss bats. And, you know, he's kind of evolved over the last couple of years. I mean, the sweeper, adding a cutter, which he did throw previously a little bit, but kind of ditched it, brought it back. Looks pretty good this spring. Kind of been up and down with the usage rate of it, but yeah, I still like Clark Schmidt a good amount. I think he's a great buy in all formats right now. And Herman's whatever. We know what Herman is. He's kind of just there because they need another arm at this point. Schmidt's definitely the more attractive target for sure.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's end the show with some more prospect ETAs, guys that aren't going to make the team out of opening day, but you know, could make some good stashes. And obviously, when you're talking about stashes and redraft leagues, depth, you know, how many bench spots you have obviously plays a factor in, because you don't want to kill a bench spot that could hurt you, you know, in the short run here. But some of these guys are, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of intriguing prospects up pretty soon here, starting right near the top. Like, I think, you know, obviously opening day, we'll get Carroll and Henderson. I think Walker's opening day as well. I think we see Ellie. I don't know. What do you think we see? You know, I think that the two big ones that are not going to be up opening day, but are up at some point this year, are obviously Volpe and Ellie, though. I don't know. Maybe we do see Volpe opening day. I'm not ruling that out at this point. But when do you think we see Volpe and Ellie, Chris? And kind of what kind of league structure? Like how deep of a league would you be looking at stashing them right now?
I don't really think I'm touching Ellie in a redraft. No? I don't think he's up until September. I think there's still a lot of development to be had here. And I don't know. Maybe I'm completely misreading the situation, but I just don't think he's going to be 2023 relevant. But Volpe's interesting. I think that Volpe's ready. I think the Yankees still have to make a trade to clear a spot for him. Like, and Oswald Peraza's getting the job because, one, Peraza finished the year in New York last year. So here's my thing. It'd be weird if Volpe started the year as a shortstop opening day and he struggled. They send him down. They put Peraza in the spot and then later try to bring back Volpe in that role. It just wouldn't jive right. So
right.
Peraza's going to get the first crack. And honestly, like, if he performs well, then Volpe becomes the second baseman. Peraza's the better glove anyway. So
yeah,
I could see that happening where Volpe's at second and Peraza's at short. But that would require a trade of Gleyber Torres, which actually wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, that's been rumored for a couple of years now. They were shopping Gleyber Torres, so he could get moved. I mean, you know, they could, let's see, where do they need depth? I mean, their rotation's already kind of falling apart. Even though it was slated to be kind of one of the better rotations in baseball, injuries have kind of hit them. Who knows with Rodon? I mean, Rodon may not be serious. I mean, Josh Donaldson is just way past his prime at third base. So they can also, and the crazy thing is, like, they could use some help in the outfield. Like, you've got Judge in center. And then other than that, I mean, right now they're lined up for Oswaldo Cabrera in right and Aaron Hicks in left. So maybe they go out and shop Gleyber Torres. Who knows? I don't think it happens immediately, but I could see that happening if they're just really confident in Anthony Volpe. So I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. I think Volpe's much more relevant for 2023 than Ellie De La Cruz is.
Interdivision trade here. I will give them Alex Verdugo. They give us Gleyber Torres. There you go.
They need a contact hitter like Alex Verdugo in that lineup.
That could actually make sense. Yeah. It's kind of a bad trade, but that could make sense. Obviously, it would never happen. Though, you know, Yankees and Red Sox have been kind of dealing with each other more than they used to, so it's not completely out of the question. But, yeah, I think Volpe's up very soon. I still think it's Peraza's opening day. He's a better, like you mentioned, better glove. He's a better arm. Volpe's arm, probably more suited for second base, but I do think we see him pretty early. I'm a little more bullish on Ellie, though. This could be, obviously, it's going to be up to Ellie. If he's going out there and doing what he did last year again this year, he might force their hand and make the decision for them a little earlier than they might anticipate. But I do think, in general, he's second half of the year. I'll say, like, probably July, August or so. So he'd be, it'd need to be a deeper league. But he's a guy, like, he want an upside stash. But I'm like, all the upside in the world with Ellie De La Cruz is there. Colton Cowser, another one that I think could be up earlier in the year. He hit a 476-foot blast the other day over the batter's eye in center field. Absolute tank shot. Though he's had some issues with lefties in the past, I do think he's up fairly early. And then, obviously, you still got Jordan Westberg in play. You got Connor Norby. I don't know. When do you feel we see like that trio of Cowser, Norby, and Westbrook up with Baltimore this year?
Probably by at least midseason. I think this depends on a couple of things. Like, one, like, what does the situation look like at shortstop? I just don't see it lasting with Jorge Mateo. And that may be Joey Ortiz jumping in this spot. The Adam Frazier experiment at second probably doesn't last long either. So that's probably where we see a Westbrook or a Norby come into the situation. Nice thing is that Westberg's really versatile. So Westberg could find himself on the roster sooner and just kind of like spell these guys when they have days off. So he can play short. He can play third. He can play second. So the versatility does help him a bit, which I think gives him the leg up there for earlier playing time. The Cowser situation's interesting because the outfield's pretty set with Cedric Mullins in center. And then they've got Anthony Santander in right field. Austin Hayes is in left. And before the spring, I probably would have just said, like, okay, there's, like, no way that Austin Hayes, like, can maintain, like, or can keep the spot over one of these guys. But he's actually quietly been pretty good this spring. That may have fallen off a bit, but it hasn't, actually. 25 at-bats, he's 4 home runs, 400 average, at 14.24 OPS. So Hayes has put together a really good spring. It's made me kind of reconsider that a bit. So, you know, Cowser's doing everything he can, though. I mean, he hit, what, a 476-foot bomb? Yep. Something like that. It's pretty crazy. Kyle Stowers is also going to get reps first. He's slated to DH right now, but he's going to play in the outfield some, too. So, it's an interesting situation. But looking at the Orioles bench, there's just – it's not very good. So – they're not going to bring up top prospects to sit on the bench right now, but I certainly could see like Cowser getting a shot. You know, like I said, the Adam Frazier experiment may not last that long. Jorge Mateo could completely lose the job. Like everybody talks about him a lot, but he's not really that good of a real life player in comparison to fantasy where he gave you 35 steals last year, hit 13 home runs. Like he's just not he had an 82 WRC plus last year. He's not a good real life player. He was a fantasy darling, but not much else there. And he could fall off the map really, really quick. So there are chances. It just depends on how these guys perform, I think.
Yeah, that's why, you know, obviously if you have, you know, you put like a, you know, a Yahoo league, you have like five bench spots, it's probably not worth it to stash these guys. But, you know, deeper benches, you know, you get 8, 9, maybe 10 bench spots where you can afford to stash a guy or two. All three of these guys make sense. So like you kind of just alluded to, Chris, well, it's not like a complete open door. There are chances. You know, I could easily see both, you know, Norby and Westy taking over in middle infield spots for Frazier and Mateo. Like I said, Frazier is not that good anymore. He never really was that good. Mateo, like you mentioned, better fantasy guy. He's not even that great of a fantasy guy to, you know, bring to the speed, but guy that's projected for a sub-300 OBP, sub-400 slug. He's not that good, so he can easily lose his job. And Stauer, so I like a little bit, but he's not far from a lock. So maybe Cowser gets some DH. You know, maybe they move Hayes to DH a little bit too. I don't know. I could easily see a scenario. Sorry, I bit my tongue out of nowhere, where all three of these guys are starting regularly by the All-Star break. So all three are pretty good stashes, I think, outside of, you know, super shallow leagues. Keeping it on the East Coast here with the Mets, Beatty been tearing it up this spring, and Francisco Alvarez as well. Now, I was talking with, you know, our buddy Michael Simeone, and this was before, I think right before spring game started or right in the very beginning. So before Beatty kind of went bonkers, but his kind of thought process was that we don't see either of them early on. I think that's still the case with Alvarez because, you know, they want him as their, you know, long-term catcher, you know, a guy that they can, you know, they don't want to screw this up, and they have a lot. Now they're, well, they did have a lot of good names on this team. Now they're going down like flies with injuries, but I think the process is, all right, we still want, obviously, Alvarez to be our long-term everyday catcher. So we don't want to rush him along. That's why they brought in Omar Narváez and you know, Tomas Nieto on that team. So I think he starts in AAA and gets a month or two there to really, you know, hone the defensive skills, pitch calling, all of that. I think Beatty's going to force their hand here. I don't know where it is, whether it's third base, left field, DH, combination of the three. But I don't know if it's opening day, though. I think he's going to force it. I think he says, if I gun to my head, I would say Beatty makes the opening day roster, but if not, it'd be very early. So Beatty's definitely a guy that, you know, would be one to stash. Alvarez, I don't know. It has to be a deeper league for me to stash him. So I don't think he's up for the first month of the season.
Yeah, I'm in agreement on Alvarez, and they've just basically straight up said he's going to start the year in the minors. Yeah. I don't think they would have made the moves they had this offseason to get it, you know, Omar Narváez. They have Tomas Nieto there as well. So, I'm a bit concerned about Alvarez being a catcher long term as well. Like, he could just be like a DH type, which is crazy.
Maybe. And,
yeah. I mean, they're going to push for him to be catchers as long as they can. But I agree with you, too. Brett Beatty deserves to be the opening day third baseman. Eduardo Escobar is just, he's past his prime at this point. Beatty's hit really well this spring. And Brett Beatty brings a lot more to the table. Like, if this club wants their best third baseman on opening day, then it's Brett Beatty. Escobar was bad last year. He hit a hot stretch at the end of the year that kind of boosted his stats a little bit. He's been horrific this spring as well. He's getting on base at just a .222 clip. It's not good at all, if you didn't know. So Escobar has done nothing to prove that he's worthy of making this team, or not making the team, and being the starting third baseman. And Brett Beatty has proved that he should make the team and should be the starting third baseman. I think Beatty's got 30 home run pop in his bat, and I'm just afraid they're going to sit him down again, but it would be in their best interest to have Brett Beatty as their opening day third baseman.
Yeah, no, totally agree there. Anybody else that you'd be looking to maybe stash that you think's got the, you know, the combination of upside and proximity to be up early in the year to make an impact, Chris?
Look at my list and see.
I mean, maybe then, you know, obviously the Milwaukee duo, Wiemer and Frelick. I mean, they could be decent stashes there. You know, Royce, I don't know, but like, obviously Royce Lewis won't be ready for start of the year. Even when he is back healthy, which is, looks like in May, how long does it take for him to get up? I'm not sure if he's a great stash. Maybe. Obviously, he's had some pretty good offensive numbers, especially when he came up last year. But I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with a guy like Royce Lewis. And then, I don't know, does Michael Bush ever get a shot? Like, even when the Gavin Lux goes down, it's like, I don't know what it's going to take for Michael Bush to get a shot out there with the Dodgers. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with him as well.
Yeah, I think Sal Frelick probably should be in the opening day lineup. I think that Frelick is like this year's Stephen Kwan. Like that's with more power too, which I really like. But it appears Garrett Mitchell is okay. So Mitchell probably man center field. And then you've got Yelich in the left. And Brian Anderson in right. Like that could go a couple of ways there. But I do think Frelick probably works his way on the team pretty quick. He was pretty solid this spring. He had a good WBC as well. So, you know, it could happen. I'm not sure he makes the opening day lineup, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him getting regular time, you know, by May. So, Frelick's definitely one to stash for, like, really good batting average, some pop, some speed. So, I think Frelick's one of the best pure hitters in the game, like, up there, like, talking about Stephen Kwan. So,
yep.
I would definitely be in on Sal Frelick. The Bush situation's weird. Like, I don't know what else he has to prove, as you said. Like, he's kind of positionless, which hurts him a bit, but the bat's good enough to play, in my opinion. I think that the Astros catcher situation is going to be pretty interesting. Yiner Diaz has been really good. His bat is certainly capable of playing every day, but he's not the best behind the plate. But they also have Corey Lee, who is a much better catcher. The bat's not there.
If they just combined Yiner Diaz offensively and Corey Lee defensively, you're a pretty damn good catcher.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the Astros lineup's getting interesting because you have Jose Altuve out. You see David Hensley probably at second base. I think we could see Yiner Diaz get some run at a corner outfield spot, which is wild. He could even get DH time too. Like Jordan can be in the corner. We could see Yiner DH. Yiner Diaz bats exceptionally good. Like when we look at players like statistically that were just like insane standouts last year in the minors, like he tops every list of like contact and EV stuff, like just off the charts, like really, really good stuff. So he may be one that gets some reps like really soon. And his bat's extremely good. I mean, we're looking at like an 85%+ zone contact. He had a 92 mile an hour average EV, 106, 90 EV, hard hit rate of 51%, which is insane. Like his bat's really good and the bat's going to play. So I think he can get some run. Maldonado's just, he's not great anymore.
But they love Maldonado there for some reason, though. Like, he keeps hanging on there. And yeah, it's kind of weird. Like Yiner Diaz is another one that's kind of in a little bit of limbo right now where it's like, all right, are you going to play him or not? Like, what are your, like, I want to know like what their long-term thoughts are for Yiner Diaz. But yeah, the bat is, like you mentioned, it cannot be questioned. Like the metrics are there. The performance is there in, you know, the upper levels, especially. So yeah, hopefully we can see some sort of Yiner Diaz impact this year because I drafted him in our FPAS rookie draft, a rookie only draft that we did for that panel. So hopefully we see him at some point this year. We'll see. But I think this is going to wrap up this episode, though. Again, hodgepodge, a lot of fun storylines, fun spring training battles, kind of taking shape here as we got opening day right around, a week and a half or so away. I'm sure a lot of these will come to fruition and play out over the next week or so. So this will be fun to see how these do play out. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Our show is at ToolshedPod. Drop that 5-star rating and review if you don't mind. And then check out, obviously, Chris's work on Substack, my work on Patreon. And we will see you again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal.
All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.